Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, welcome to Horse Hour. Today I talk to the lovely American eventer, Christina Henriksen. And her husband, Jeff, joins us too. I think it's quite nice to get a man's perspective. After all, they're the ones that have to put up with our horsey passion, being at the yard all day at night. And let's be honest, we're a little bit crazy. So it's really nice to get Jeff's perspective. And also some Americanisms. What's really the difference between American equestrians and UK equestrians? Christina shares the story of her eventing journey and what it's been like since she's moved over to the UK. Hello!
Hey!
It's really lovely to meet you. Thank you so much. Have you been riding today already?
Yes, yeah. It was a wet morning, so...
Oh, bless you. I know. I'm going to go out shortly. I'm, like, praying that the rain will go away. But I've just seen someone in the background. Who's that? I want to wave.
Yes, this is my husband, Jet. Hey, come here. This is Jeff, Amy.
Hello.
Jeff.
Nice to meet you.
Although he can't hear me, can he?
There we go. Up for a second.
Hello, Jeff. Nice to meet you. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you doing?
Good. So do you ride as well?
Well, a little bit. Not just for fun. I grew up riding Western in Texas. So, my goodness.
Christina, you've got a true cowboy. That's so cool.
Yeah,
I do.
Although she makes fun of my Western riding isms, so we have a good time going back and forth. So
we should have like an ism off. Like, we want to know what's the difference between some of the words that we say in the UK as opposed to what you say, and then cross discipline, because I feel like I talk to a lot of our American listeners, and I feel like I don't really know enough about America, if I'm honest.
I mean. Wow, we could do a whole podcast on that.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, there's
a lot of little things that you just you don't realize until you live here, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you guys, and I picked it up too, because I go home and I say them. But you know,
brilliant is the biggest one.
Saying cheers after somebody does something nice for you, like in the States, we only say that when we're like toasting, I guess.
Yeah.
We don't really say
that much, though. That's kind of a myth, I think, of America compared to England. I don't feel we say cheers that much.
Maybe we say it too much.
I'll tell you one that does stick out is instead of like buddy or bro, like mate, right? So, hey, mate, you know, so when I go back home and speak to my friends now, I'll be like, hey, mate. And they're like, what are you calling me mate for? You know, and it's so that's one. You guys use the word sorted a lot. That's a very popular word.
Where have you all been hanging out? I feel you've been hanging out in really rough areas.
Maybe we have. So,
we live out in the country. We live out in Burford.
Yeah, we're in the country. That's not a bad spot, right?
Burford. No, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. What about the horsey equestrian side then? What differences do you see from being over there to being over here?
Oh my God, there's so many differences. So actually, Eventing Nation just had a blogger that did a whole thing on the difference between the UK and America, and not just on the words, but just on the differences in the eventing scene and the horse scene. It's funny because I have a full-time groom who is British, and she's like numna. She'll say numna all the time, and I'm like, oh, saddle pad, you know. That we will collect the horses. Oh, bring them in.
Yes.
A head collar. First time someone said head collar, I'm like, a what?
So what do you call that?
A halter.
Oh, that makes sense.
For taking the things off, the studs off, instead of a wrench, yeah.
Oh, my farrier. So yeah. My farrier was hilarious. He came out one day to fix the stud hole. And he asked me if I had a, oh God, what was
it? A spinner.
A spinner. He asked me if I had a spinner. And I was like.
A spanner.
A spinner, like spin? Like
a spinner.
What's a spinner?
Right. Okay, it is not just us. So we would call that a wrench, you know, it's like in the U.S., it's like a wrench. You have a nut and a bolt and you use a wrench, right? And
yeah.
So maybe it's our part of the world out here. We're getting some colloquialisms that are maybe unique to the Cotswolds.
The only thing, well, the Cotswolds are amazing. Those guys know what they're talking about, people that live there. But the only word I could think of is maybe that he means spanner rather than spinner. So it's a bit like a wrench. It's a similar kind of thing. However, why he is using a spanner to take off the horse's shoes, I've got no idea.
No.
Oh, no. It was to fix the stud hole.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, well, then maybe.
Yeah,
he was trying to he was trying to put a stud in to see which hole had been stripped,
right.
And so and I couldn't know what he was talking about, and so I just bought the whole stud box out to him, the whole kit. And I have no idea what you're talking about. Here's my Americanism, because I don't really know what you're talking about. And then I pulled out the kit, and he pulled out the wrench, and he's like, oh, it's a wrench.
Oh, amazing. And what about in terms of riding then? So Jeff, have you ridden over here?
Hacking.
He goes out hacking with me.
But nothing other than that.
I'm hoping to get him out fox hunting this winter.
She's trying to talk me into that, but I don't know.
You need your brave pants on, definitely.
Yeah, I'm more about hitting up the hunt ball and letting you guys do all the crazy stuff.
and so what was it you did? You did reining?
No, I grew up did calf roping and team roping in the States.
Cool.
So the rodeo event. Yeah, and I did that through high school, and then quit, went to college, and then I really didn't start riding again until I met Christina, and then started riding English, so that was a bit of a switch.
And is that how you guys met? Did you meet through the horses?
So I was working as an assistant trainer at a dressage barn outside of Boulder, Colorado, and Jeff's mom had a horse there that she had in livery, and I'd known Jeff's mom for a year before I ever met Jeff, and his mom was waiting for me to break up with my then boyfriend, and literally it wasn't even like 2 weeks, and
she waited. She gave a 2 week window.
Yeah, she gave me a 2 week window to get over my heartbreak. Jeff's out there helping his mom and the farrier. And
amazing, go mom! She's up, awesome.
Right? Yeah, so, you know she was supposed to call me, and she didn't for a week. I was like, okay, maybe she didn't like me, whatever. And then like 2 weeks later, I was playing poker with some buddies of mine in Denver, and I got a text message from her. She was like, hey, you want to go to a baseball game? And I went to a baseball game, and that was, the rest was history.
So, Christina, you actually asked Jeff out on a date first.
No, I didn't.
I asked her out, and she said, I'm going to be in Denver next weekend. Give me your number, and I'll text you when we get down there. So I was like, fair enough. Mm-hmm. So I gave her my number, and just crickets, you know, I never heard. So I was like, I got blown off, you know. And, and then she texted me like a week later, or a week after she was supposed to. But then we went to a baseball game.
You're not bitter or anything, are you?
No,
clearly.
Not at all.
9 years later, you better not be
bitter. Yeah, right. No, I like to give her grief for it. But we went to a game, and we started dating. Like we went on like 4 dates in a row, like in 4 days in a row. And like we're hanging out a lot. And started dating really quickly,
got engaged, got
dated
married,
2 years, and then got married.
That's amazing. Your mum is amazing. She's a genius, isn't she? She's put you both together. It's lovely. So what would we call her over here? Cupid. Your mum's Cupid.
She,
definitely.
Yeah, she has a bow and arrow, and you know, let it fly and hit the bullseye. So
what's it like then having a really successful wife, Jeff, that's riding all the time? Because you know, we take the mick out of our other halves a lot and say they are horse widowers, and we, as much as we have to deal with the football and you know them having football and rugby on the TV, actually they have to deal with a lot with us being away and down the yard. So how do you guys make it work?
I mean, you know, she is, I mean, we both are, I think, really very passionate about what we do. I work in finance and I love my job, and so I'm really busy with what I have going, and Christina's very busy with what she has going. And, you know, it's, we kind of live in two different worlds during the day, you know, because she's out at the barn. I work in Oxford, but then at night we come back and, you know, she tells me about her day. I tell her about mine. And
we try and do a lot of trips.
And we do a lot of trips together.
We try and do a lot of trips. And actually probably the biggest thing lately has been, we bought a new lorry.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so I had a two-horse little horse box for the first year and a half we were here, 2 years this year, because I could drive that on my American license. Mm-hmm. So I had four horses going and a two-horse horse box. Didn't really work really well. But so we've been trying to upgrade to an HGB for quite some time, and we knew what we were looking for, but it just took a long time to get one. And so we just bought a really nice 12-ton, and Jeff went with us to Aspinwall's on Sunday.
On Sunday.
And his beer in the fridge and his book.
Yeah.
And
I had a computer. I could work. I could then go out and watch her when she competed, and then got to, you know, go back and be in the lorry and stuff. So it made it easier, because like when you're in the two horse one, it was kind of like just hanging out on the bumper for like, you know, 9 hours. Got a bit old, but yeah. So.
That's so lovely, though. I took Mark, we're due to get married in September, actually. I took him up to it. Thank you. I thought I'd better do it quickly so he doesn't have a chance to run away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, being married, that here again, this is a whole nother podcast, but being married to a horsewoman, to an eventer is interesting at times. I mean, the thing is, I think with you guys is you're also passionate about what you're doing, that it really, I mean, in a lot of ways, I mean, obviously it's time, you know, the amount of time that gets spent on it can be difficult at times, but for me, I mean, I really admire Christina for how hard she works and what she puts into it. And then being able to watch her, you know, achieve goals that she sets and be able to experience that with her.
Even from the beginning, because when
is an amazing feeling.
Like when you met me, I was very, very, very amateur.
Yeah.
Not been event. I mean, I've had horses my whole life, but in Colorado, I'd do 2-3 events a year. I was working at a yard, but I was doing BE 100, and that was a big, big deal back then to me. And, you know, to come all the way from that to now having a string of four successful horses. And Jeff has been a big, big backer behind Henriksen Eventing. I mean, he's been a major role in my success and my ability to be able to do this the way that we have. And it's been really, really cool.
I mean,
amazing. It's really lovely. And then to see that growth and the fact that Jeff is part of that from the beginning. And, you know, there are times when you're exhausted, you've got no money, you're trying to pay for the next trip out just to get to a competition. Eventing's an expensive sport in itself. We hear this a lot. So to have that, such a good, strong support network around you, must help for so that you, Christina, can then concentrate on your psychological side of the riding.
Yeah,
I try very hard to concentrate on that side, but that's probably, you know, eventing is a really hard sport, and psychologically, I mean, you know, you have to be really physically fit to do the sport, and obviously with a good rider, but I think the psychological side of the sport is probably the hardest part of it all. And I think that, you know, when you see people at the top of their game, at the top levels of the sport, they're not people that just came into it, you know. We had the absolute luxury of getting to know Bettina Hoy this spring, who was based with us, and she is phenomenal, but she has spent many, many, many years riding at the top of the sport and mastering the psychological skills. And she said to me one day, I think it was after she won at Chatsworth, she's like, you have to know that you can win, and you have to want to win. You know, she said so much of this is psychological. Once you've, you know, mastered the skills and have been riding at the top for a long time, a lot of it is psychological.
And do you have that, Christina? Because you're so sweet. I can imagine you having that, you know, that, oh, I'm going to beat everybody. I can just imagine you going, thanks very much. Sorry about that. I'm just going to overtake you.
She's a competitor for sure. don't let the smile fool you.
I do struggle a bit with the psychological side, and that is something that I'm trying really hard to get better at. And I think doing the sport in England and having a string of horses and going out and competing all the time, and really, you know, really being aware of where your mind is at and what you're thinking about as you go into the start box, as you go into your dressage test, I think those are all things that it takes lots of practice. And lots of experience. And, you know, I used to go into show jumping and I would get so nervous. I would land from a fence halfway through the course and forget where I was going.
Really? And what was that? Was that because you just go blank because the nerves took over?
The nerves would take over. And I wanted it so bad that I couldn't, I couldn't keep the nurse from taking over. And I did that. I did that quite a few times. And, our area championships and different, you know, events that meant a lot to me. And so, you know, now 3 seasons into being here, I'm able to go into the show jumping and think about, you know, my canter, my rhythm, my balance, and where I'm going and the next fence. And it's the experience has made a massive difference. But
how did you get through that period?
I'll say one thing. I think Christina, since she's been here, and I'll say this, that psychologically, I think that's been her biggest improvement. I mean, I've seen that firsthand, and we've talked a lot about it, but the confidence level that she has going in now versus when we first moved over here has been amazing. And I think that's been one of the most enjoyable things about her journey that I've been fortunate enough to witness.
Just before you scoot off and get back to your work, because we're very grateful for a husband's opinion right now, what is it, do you think, that our partners can do to help support us just a little bit more? I mean, we know they're super supportive anyway, but like you saying then that you're so proud of Christina and how she has enhanced her psychological side of the sport. What do you think our husbands and wives could do?
So you want my opinion from the mistakes that I've made, which I think are probably the most valuable opinions, right? The mistakes that I've made is, you know, I've always, because I don't know much about the technical elements. I mean, I know a little bit just having been around it, but I don't know enough to comment on why she maybe, you know, didn't have enough strides into a jump or whatever. But, you know, the psychological part, I've tried to help her with, you know, like kind of her mental mindset before she goes in, what she should think about. And then what I've learned is that there are times when you should be that way and say, maybe you should do this different and be constructive. And then there are times when you just need to purely be supportive, and you need to know the difference between when's a moment to really to talk about, like, okay, let's talk about what went wrong, and when's a moment to just plain be supportive. And that's something I've had to learn through trial and error. Although I think I've gotten better at it. So that would be my big take.
Well, you're still together, so you definitely got through it. I was explaining this to Mark the other day. I was like, I don't always want your opinion. Sometimes I just want you to say, "Well done, I'm so proud of you."
Absolutely, because guys, we always have an opinion, and it's not that we're, you know, it's that we see something, we're like, well, what about this? Did you think about this? And sometimes it's called for, and sometimes, you know, Christina wants my input, and other times it's like you just said, just, you know, and you should get good enough to kind of be able to read the situation well enough to not, you know, go wrong. And my advice is trial and error, and eventually you get it down. So I'm still learning, but I have gotten better. But anyway, it was a pleasure to meet you, and I'll let you guys get back to it.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Jeff. Thanks so much. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, babe.
So Jeff was really kind in saying that, you know, he's really proud of the way that you've enhanced in your psychology. How did you get through that process, Christina? We've all been there, you know, having the nerves in the show jumping ring and going, oh my God, where am I supposed to go next? How did you get from that to not having a complete meltdown and giving everything up to now you're in a position where you don't have that meltdown, you don't have that mind blank anymore?
Well, it's not to say that it's gone forever. I don't want to jinx myself. But I think a lot of it is being really comfortable in the training at home and being really prepared. You can never be over prepared. You know, having the horses feeling really good at home, making mistakes at home so you know how to handle it in competition. Everybody wants to train perfectly all the time. And for me, I'm so terrified of making mistakes all the time that I had to learn to just accept that I was going to make mistakes. Of course, everybody makes mistakes. And to not be so afraid of it, and to take everything as a learning experience. I've been show jumping with Grant Wilson since December, and I have to say, Grant has really, really changed the way that I show jump and the way that I think and feel my horses underneath me. Julie too also has really helped me a lot over the winter, and just, you know, the practice and the repetition and knowing what I need to be feeling and thinking about that when I go on the ring, not thinking about the results, not thinking about, you know, what if, just thinking about what does my horse feel like, what is going on underneath me, and what is my balance like, and focusing on that. And then it takes your mind, if you can channel your mind into what's going on underneath you, I think it's much easier to keep from being distracted from the other elements.
So interesting, because I was talking to a psychologist last week called Charlie Unwin. And
oh, okay. I've always wanted to meet him.
Loveliest guy. Really, really lovely and so fascinating to talk to. And he said exactly that. It's you need to get a focus. And you need to focus your mind so you're not thinking about the what ifs, because I'm the same as you were in that position, really. I'm thinking, what if the horse spooks? What if I fall off? I mean, did you hear, oh my goodness, today it's been all in the news that this poor girl, she was in one of the competitions and she was in the vets, you know, they do the vets inspection afterwards. And throughout the vets, what happened was while they were doing the vet inspection, her groom pulled off the fly ears and the whole bridle fell off the horse, and the horse spooked and bolted through the event. And sadly, the horse has had a few injuries. He's okay. But that sort of thing is a massive what if. You don't actually expect it to happen, but it can happen. So there's no point really thinking about the what ifs and worrying about them, because you can't really control that. The only thing you can control is you. And I thought, that's amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's so many things in eventing in any horse sport that can go wrong at any given time that you have absolutely no control over. So I think, you know, if you can focus on the things you do have control over, it's really important. I mean, I had, oh my gosh, on Sunday, I had a total, like, had no control over it. I was sitting in second in a big intermediate division, had personal best dressage score over 27 on Caio Della Cassia, clear show jumping, went cross country. He's going brilliantly. And we get to the hedges and at Aston the Walls, you had to jump them going out. And then there was a galloping lane right next to it, you jump them coming back. Well, as we're headed to the hedge at fence number 7, someone is coming at the exact same time, the other direction.
Oh, no.
Going to jump it the exact same time. Just, you know, but 20 feet over. 20 feet over. But still, you know, we were still jumping the same hedge line right next to each other. And I love Caio Della Cassia. He is the most brilliant horse. He is.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Amazing. But his inquisitive nature can get him in trouble sometimes. And his little ears pricked at the hedge, and then it pricked at the horse that was galloping at him. And I lost all the gallop. I lost all of the focus. I'm doing everything I can to get him back together. Mm. And he is so focused on the horse that's galloping next, you know, coming at him and then going to jump the same hedge just further over, that I completely lost the canter, lost it. And it was too big of a hedge for him by the time he refocused to actually jump it on the stride we were on, that he had no choice but to stop.
But, you know, any horse is going to look at another horse that's galloping towards him over the hedge. My horse would turn and run the other direction. So you did well to even keep him. You did well to just keep him going to try and get over the hedge.
But it was so gutting because, you know, we were sitting in the place to be in a top placing in our first season of intermediate and halfway through it. And but you know, it's just one of those things you have absolutely no control over. The only thing I had control over is what I did next. I circled him. I rode him forward. He jumped around the rest of the course absolutely beautifully. Didn't have much of a choice at that point because I was a little cross with him. but you know, you never know what's going to happen. What are the odds that the timing is going to be that random that you're going to come and meet, you know, at that point in the track? Like, all the years that I've been eventing, I've never had anything like that happen.
And you probably will never come across it again, which is why it's such a great story to tell. But interestingly, how you handled it afterwards, I think we could all learn from that, is that you didn't freak out and go, oh my God, he can't do this, and stop there and then, because you knew, I'm presuming, you couldn't get a top placing, but you still wanted to complete the course. And does that that gives the horse confidence as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And at this point in the year, especially with this horse, he needs a lot of confidence. He needed the experience to go and say, okay, you know what, like, that sucks that happened, but you have a job to do. Mm-hmm. We both have a job to do. Now we need to get on and do it. And he did. And he was really good. And he tried really, really hard. But he knew I was cross with him. And I think he was a bit upset at the end that it happened, because he was one of those days where you just feel all the pieces clicking together. Mm-hmm. And when he went into the dressage test, it was the best he's ever felt. The show jumping, he was amazing. So, you know, like, he didn't want to stop. He didn't want to do that. Like, but he just got a bit distracted.
Oh, bless him. You can't blame him, though, can you, really? How long have you had him?
So I've had him for just 2 years. He came from Piggy French, and she had got him that spring, and he had done jumpers in Ireland as a six and seven-year-old. And then she did some 100s on him and a couple novices. And then I took over the ride in July, and I love him to bits, but he is brilliant in the show jumping. But he is a horse that on the cross country, you have to be absolutely on it all the time. And he'll help you out in the show jumping, but he won't always help you out on the cross country if you're a little bit wrong. So the time, and this season has been a really good learning curve for that. Cause I got him in July of 2015, did a few events on him that fall, and then in the spring did a few events, and then he had a small injury. So I missed most of last season with him.
Oh, bless him.
So this year's just kind of been getting the partnership, getting him more confident in his job, and me more confident at, you know, intermediate two-star level, and, you know, just kind of learning and growing together. And he's just a really cool horse. I know he's going to be really competitive someday.
is part just... of what you do then, is part of it like training them with you now? So you've taken him from, or you've now got the ride after Piggy, so she took him so far. And then how far do you want to go with him? What's your plan?
I really, you know, I want to take him as far as I possibly can. You know, I don't think he's going to be a four-star horse. He doesn't really have the gallop. He has a scope. I mean, he is the scopiest horse, but he doesn't have a big gallop. He's quite warm-blooded. So I would really like to take him to three-star and get some good at three-star experience on him, hopefully while I'm here. And then when I go back to America, then hopefully can continue on with him. You know, that's always the hope. You never know what's going to happen with horses, do you? So
you never know. You just got to keep going. And to have, what have you got, four horses under your belt now?
Yeah, I've got four. Yep. So
you're so lucky. You're just completely living the dream. It's very brave of you to leave America and to come over to the UK, and it's almost like setting up a new life for a while. What was it, do you think, that? When was the point that you thought, I could actually do this as a professional forever, and I don't need another job now? Because a lot of us have other jobs. We work 9 to 5, and then we're taking our horses and trying to compete at weekends. And at some point, you have to be sensible and make the decision to actually do this full time.
Yeah. And you have to want to. I mean, it's not easy. And for me, I was a registered nurse in America. I worked as a nurse part-time, and I then did the horses part-time as well. And actually coming over here was just out of pure luck. It was not planned. It was not, my husband randomly came up to me in November of 2015 and said, you know, what would you think if I applied for the executive MBA program in Oxford? Would you move to England? And
wow.
I didn't even have to think about it. I just, absolutely. And so it's funny because he was the last person accepted in the program 2 weeks later. He did his application. He was accepted to start in January of 2016. So it was a whole life-changing, not planned, really last minute, kind of one of those, we're young, we've got the opportunity to do this, let's do it. And so for me, it was the first time that I really, really thought that I could do this full time. I could, you know, learn a lot and grow a lot and hopefully have the opportunity to make a career out of it someday. And I've got so far to go, but it really was an opportunity of a lifetime. And so we both just jumped at it. And so we came over, we moved over that following April full time. Two corgis and one horse came over.
That's amazing. I mean, it must have. How did you even go about bringing your horse over here? That must have cost. I always say it must have cost a fortune.
Yeah, I mean the thing is like international horse transport is such a big thing, like more so in America than here, because Americans come over and buy horses all the time from Europe. So that actually, I have to say, the horse transport was probably the easiest part of the entire move over here.
Really? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, and I was based in Florida for the winter with just another two-star horse that I have, Princess Pavon, that I had her from a five-year-old, and just she was bought to be resale, and I just ended up keeping her and taking her up to levels. And so, yeah, she was the easiest part, but it definitely, when you move to a foreign country and you're starting a new life, it's a really, really hard challenge. And it's not just the moving and the setting up, but then sometimes you go, well, what now? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm here, but what now? Where do I go from here? And I have to say, for me, that was probably one of the most difficult things, because it took a long time for me to find my place here and to find a community that I fit into and that I wanted to be with, and a good program. And unfortunately, I spent the first year in not the right place for me, and I didn't meet any people, and I wasn't growing, and I wasn't learning. And you know, when I left the yard and moved to Julie Choose last year, Julie's introduced me to a ton of people. I've met lots and lots of just horse people, and I've been able to connect with some really good coaches, and that's kind of helped me set up the program for the horses I have now. But it just takes a long time.
It does.
It takes a long time.
It does. And it frustrates me that you weren't made to feel welcome. I hate it. I hate yards where the women are bitchy and they're so worried about what's going on in their own lives that they're not prepared to make people feel welcome. And a friend of mine has just moved out. She's moved out to Australia, and she's going through the same thing as you right now, you were then, which is really tough, finding, trying to make friends, and you're so used to your own way, and you end up second guessing yourself and questioning your own personality, because you're thinking, well, why aren't I making friends? Like, nobody wants to be my friend. But it's not you, it's just the rest of them are so selfish that they're just thinking about themselves and not thinking about, you know, really making you feel welcome. So I'm always rooting for people just to be nice. And if you have a new person come in your yard, it doesn't take 5 minutes just to welcome them and offer them a cup of tea, which is what us Brits love to do. Love to have tea, you know, and just have a chat. I mean, granted, you're not going to get on with everybody, but to make you feel welcome, I think, is the most important thing.
Yeah.
How did you end up getting to Bettina's yard then? Because that's just like one of the ultimate yards.
I wasn't at Bettina's yard. Bettina was based at Julie's yard this spring when she was preparing for badminton.
Ah.
And so she was there with her students, and it was absolutely amazing to have her there every day to watch her training processes. And Bettina's just she's a lovely person. She's very kind, always cared about how everybody else was doing around the yard, how the competitions were going, I really enjoyed just talking to her, and she's such a wealth of knowledge, and always you learn so much just from talking to her. And she's helped me a bit with my horses, and I feel very, very lucky that she was there. And she is the epitome of what we all want to be someday. I mean, my gosh, she's had an amazing season, and her horses are absolutely incredible. So it was quite different this spring compared to, say, 2 years ago when I had left America. And when I was in America, I had an amazing support team. I had amazing coaches that, were there every step of the way and really helped me with this journey. And so coming over here and being in a yard for a year where I didn't have that, and I really lost a lot of confidence. And it was a very private yard, very private professional yard. And it just wasn't what I had needed. But I was lucky last spring to find Julie's place, and then to meet Annabelle Scrimgore, who I'm doing dressage with now, and Grant Wilson, who literally when I started jumping with him in December, could hardly canter a Cavalletti because I had lost so much confidence. And now, he has me jumping around 2-star courses clear. So
it's incredible. But, it's amazing.
It sport is so much about the people around us too, and the team, not just our team of professionals that are around us, but also our support team, our friends, our families, everybody that stands behind us. If we don't have that, it makes it really hard to keep the want to keep going some days when it gets really tough, So I always think it's those people that make a massive difference in the sport too.
Well, clearly, Jeff said the right thing then that day that your horse was a little bit naughty. He was obviously reading your face well that day and giving you the good support. But no, I do get what you mean, and I totally agree with you. Support is so massive. And it does break my heart a little bit when I see that some people are struggling and they're not getting the support. So I would happily put myself out there. I'll come to any events with you. I'll be your cheerleader, Christina, with a banner, good or bad, whatever. Because ultimately, you've got to enjoy it. And I know, yes, we want to pay the bills and we've got horses to feed and rent to pay for. But if you can enjoy it and just remember, I think it's very easy to forget why we're doing it and why we got into it in the first place. And you've got to enjoy it. And as a spectator, because I can't compete anywhere near your level. I mean, I can't even jump at the moment, let alone attempt to go around a little course, let alone a 2-star course. So as a spectator, I enjoy it so much more when I know that the rider and the horse is enjoying it. And when they look even remotely happy or smiley or anything, even if it goes wrong, you can see it in their face. They're just like, oh, man, that wasn't great. But we know there's a lot of money at stake, but, we want to see you enjoy it.
Yeah. At the end of the day, we all work too hard to not enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. And I very much agree with you as a spectator. You can tell when people are enjoying it and when they're not. And I have this amazing friend and coach, Laura Backus in Colorado. And when I was in the States, would always come out of dressage tests, even if I had an amazing test. And I would be unhappy because I would find fault with it right away. And Laura got really tired of me doing this because a lot of times I'd come out and be really mad and I had, something wasn't quite right. And then have a great score at the end of the day. And she's like, you know what? You need to enjoy this more. And every time you come out of a test from now, the rest of your career, I want you to say that was a great test and smile. And I was like, I can't do but you know what, like now I try really, really hard to have a smile on my face always when I leave, even if I'm gritting my teeth, even if I have a 6-year-old this spring that I had a beautiful test, beautiful halt, and when I went to salute, she yanked the reins out of my hands. And as mad as I was, I still put a smile on my face and walked out, because you have to enjoy it. And every day there's something to fix. Every day there's something to make better. And but
that's what makes it so incredible, is that you were unhappy, but you were doing amazing tests and getting great results, but you're unhappy because you want to improve and you want your horse to improve, and we're always looking to improve. So people who have been around for years are still improving. So at some point you've got to sit back and start enjoying it and going, okay, but that's okay, we can learn from that and we can move on and we can improve, but we're going to improve with a smile.
Yes, exactly. Well, exactly.
Christina,
but I think the horses feel it too. And you know, at the end of the day, like, they don't have to do this for us. We ask them to do insane things. And, you know, like, they know when we're happy and when we're not happy. And even if we can fake it, it still makes them want to do the job more. And at the end of the day, they have to want to do the job for us.
That's so, very true. Very true.
You know?
Well, Christina, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you for sharing so much of your story. And I'm really excited for you for the next, only the rest of this season, because I saw you jump at Barbary and I thought you were amazing. What horse were you on at Barbary?
Thank you. That's Cairo della Cassia. We'll go to Cholmondeley Castle this weekend. And then we're headed to the Mill Street CIC 2-star in August, which I'm so excited because I haven't been abroad yet. So it'll be our first real trip since we've been over here.
Oh, well, best of luck for that. Do let us know how you get on.
Thank you.
We follow you on Twitter?
I don't have Twitter. I have Instagram and I do Facebook. So
we need to set you up with a Twitter account so you can get involved in Horse Hour on Twitter. But how can we follow you on Instagram and Facebook?
So on Instagram, I'm Christina_Henriksen, and that's HENRIKSEN. And then on Facebook, it's Christina Henriksen right now. So I'll put up a Henriksen eventing page eventually, probably this winter.
That's cool.
We've got a handful with that. So.
Well, you've got enough to do. You've got all those horses and competitions to attend to, and whilst trying to look after your husband and cooking him dinner and making sure he's happy too. So very busy.
Got to keep everybody happy all the time. It's a hard job, I tell you.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, Christina. Hopefully we can catch up again soon sometime, maybe like towards the end of the year, and we can have a little roundup of how it's doing, because I'd love to follow your journey. So
thank you, and I really appreciate that. It's been really great chatting with you.
Thanks so much.
Bye, thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Next week we have a fascinating guest. He has a list of accolades that are just endless. He's a fellow at the Institute for Science in Medicine. He's based over in America. He's called Dr. David Ramey. He also reviews for the Equine Veterinary Journal in London, plus the Journal of Equine Veterinary Science, the Australian Veterinary Journal. He's a member of the Board of Advisors for the American Council on Science and Health. Literally, this list goes on and on. He's had so many documents published in over 70 veterinary journals himself. And the reason that I invited him on to Horse Hour is because recently he's written an article on forelimb flexion tests. Now, the forelimb flexion tests are commonly used in evaluation of the horse's lower limbs when you go and have a vetting to buy a horse. And his article is so interesting. So I've put it on horsehour.co.uk for you to have a little read before you actually hear the episode with him. Such a fascinating man. I can't wait for you to hear that. So that's Dr. David Ramey next week on Horse Hour. This week, you can win 2 VIP tickets for the British Show Jumping National Championships at Stoneleigh. It starts on the 8th of August, and they're VIP hospitality tickets. So you get all your drinks, your food, you're treated like royalty. All you have to do is head over to Horse Hour on Twitter to enter that competition. Keep sending me your photos and your journeys of what you've been up to with your horse, because I love to see your stories. There's lots of competitions going on at the moment. And so massive congratulations to you that are doing really well. But also, if you're going out for the first time, I think it's so brave to make that step to actually go out and enter a competition. So as always, tag me
on Twitter at AmyStevenson1. You can also get involved with Horse Hour Live, which is every Monday between 8 and 9. Then I broadcast the podcast live. It's brilliant. It means that I get to involve you. You get to be on the show as well. If you'd like to be on the show, then just head to the website, as always, horsehour.co.uk. There's a little form there for you to fill in. And I just want to hear about your story, really. It's either a subject that we're talking about. If you have an opinion, then you can tweet us with your opinion. Or if you'd actually like to be on the show, then drop me a message. I hope you have a good week with your horse. I'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to Horse Hour. Join the community on Twitter, Mondays, 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern, by using the hashtag Horse Hour. Follow Amy at AmyStevenson1 and subscribe to us on Acast, iTunes, Stitcher and Player FM.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.